Gerritsen and Toth presents The Shift with Jack Johnson on ESPN Kansas City, 1510 AM and 94.5 FM.
It is Monday, and it's another edition of The Shift on 94.5 FM and 1510 AM ESPN Kansas City. I'm your host, Jack Johnson, alongside Marco Marquez. The Chiefs are finally in the win column for 2023. They get it done in ugly fashion against the Jacksonville Jaguars yesterday afternoon down in the Sunshine State. There's a lot of different things I could say about this game. I could nitpick, I could be critical, I could be negative. But I think for the majority of this segment, I'm going to point out why yesterday's win to me is a good thing, other than just it being a win for the Kansas City Chiefs. Now, going into this game, you knew you were getting back your star player in Travis Kelce. You knew you were getting back the star of your defense in Chris Jones. On the other hand, you're going up against a Jacksonville team that should win their division pretty comfortably. I don't think anybody in the AFC South is going to heavily contend with Jacksonville, but hey, we did see the Titans knock off the Chargers yesterday in overtime on a game-winning field goal. But the Chiefs get it done 17-9 over Jacksonville, and I think anytime you beat a road playoff team, it bodes well for your resume. And I did not go into yesterday expecting the Chiefs to win by two or three scores. Now, I said last week, my anticipation was they could have one of those scorched earth games where the offense hangs 40-plus, but also I thought Jacksonville would have a pretty good game against this Chiefs defense because it is a good Jacksonville offense. But what we knew about yesterday is Chris Jones was desperately missed in that Thursday night game against Detroit. You have Chris Jones in that game in week one, you win that, I would probably say, by 3 to 5 points. I think he's that good of a player on the defensive side of the ball. We saw him just wreaking havoc in the backfield. And he was asked this question at Media Day, or one of the Media Days last week, about if he's in football shape. And he kind of joked and said, I don't know. Well, he's in football shape. Had two sacks yesterday. Was constantly causing pressure in the Jacksonville backfield. And that allowed this defense to keep Jacksonville out of the end zone all afternoon long. Offensively, it was not very good for the Kansas City Chiefs. Special teams was not very good. Penalties was not very good. So across the board, here's some of the numbers that the Chiefs put up and still found a way to win by one score, but Jacksonville would have had to score and go for two and convert that. The Chiefs had 12 penalties for 94 yards. Jawan Taylor had five of those. They were sacked once. They turned it over three times. They did have over 100 yards rushing, but south of 300 yards passing. They were 4 of 13 on third down, yet they win 17-9. This is where we're going to start. That is the best aspect about this game. You know, if the Chiefs did this to Arizona, or the Chiefs did this to the Colts, then yes, I think you can voice your frustration a little bit, but we're going to see this Jags team win about 9 to 10 games again. And you had to go into their place, their home opener, and find a way to gut that one out. Now, Patrick Mahomes was not spectacular on his birthday. I thought he got much better down the stretch. He goes 29 of 41 with two touchdowns, a pick, and 305 yards. His leading receiver was Sky Moore. I said it was going to be Kadarius Toney. Thought that way early on, but in the end, he was actually the team's fourth leading receiver behind Noah Gray, Justin Watson, and, of course, Sky Moore, who had a touchdown. And I think that was his first regular season touchdown in a Chiefs uniform. Of course, had the Super Bowl touchdown, but I don't believe he scored in the regular season last year, at least not that I can remember. But this is the best part about being a really good team, is that when you're really good and you've built a culture of winning, you can be frustrated after wins. And yesterday, I think there were numerous times I was completely frustrated with the way the offense looked, the play calling again, drop passes, offensive line struggled mightily in this one. And yet, in the end, it felt like Jacksonville still needed a hope and a prayer to get it done. That's who the Chiefs are when they're rolling. Now, they're far from rolling right now. But it's good to get that monkey off your back. You know, just get that first win of the season. Now you go into week three, and you host a very bad Chicago team. Now you play offensively like you did yesterday against the Bears. Then I'm going to be even more frustrated because this is a bad Bears team you should thump. Vegas right now has you as a 12.5-point favorite. But this was a good Jacksonville team, and the defense played lights out. I heard this getting discussed all over Twitter yesterday, or I shouldn't say heard. I saw it on Twitter yesterday, that we've always wondered what Patrick Mahomes would look like with a top 10 defense. You know, I mean throughout the whole course of the year. The best defense, I think, in the Patrick Mahomes era came in his first Super Bowl, the 2019-2020 season. And that defense didn't really show up till after the bye week. Now, this defense early on is showing that we can overwhelm some teams. And get this, they still don't have their best edge rusher back, Charles O'Menihue, who we won't see until week 7, I believe it is. So right now, Chris Jones is going to be doing the heavy lifting. We've known that from the get-go. But George Karloftis has been great. They've gotten some interior pressure from Derek Nnadi. Thought he was really good yesterday. The blitzes that have been dialed up by Steve Spagnuolo have been fantastic. And I'm going to go out there and say this right now. He has not gotten a ton of love just yet. Drew Tranquil might have been the best pickup this offseason for the Chiefs. He was around every single play yesterday, hitting guys hard, getting in their face. And I love that from a guy who was brought in to be one of your best coverage linebackers. I think it's benefited Nick Bolton. I think it's benefited Willie Gay. And now the secondary may be the strongest point of the team so far. I mean, Trent McDuffie has looked great. He was tasked multiple times in defending Calvin Ridley, aside from one catch at the end of the first half where it was just a great acrobatic catch. You tip your cap. He locked him down. Now, Christian Kirk had 10-plus catches for 100-plus yards, but that's going to happen because guess what? Jacksonville couldn't go to Ridley. They could sparingly go to Evan Ingram, but they scored 9 points. This defense, time and time again, showed up big. When Richie James decided the best option for him on a punt when he was blinded by the sun was to stick his hands out there, one, I think that should get you off the special team spot. I know you signed him to be a special teamer. Well, you do that, you muff a punt, next man up. That's how I think I'd handle my special teams unit. Should have about 3 guys that can catch a damn punt. You drop one, next man up. We'll just keep rotating until somebody has a hot stretch. But after he does that, the defense comes back on the field, holds Jacksonville to a field goal. That could have been a momentum-shifting play where Jacksonville goes down, defense had just gotten off the field, and then Jacksonville goes and punches it in because your special teamer thinks it'll be cute and funny to catch a ball blindly when he can't see it. Oh, I've got an idea. Just get the hell out of the way. Just like when an outfielder can't see a ball in the sun, you just cover your body, try to get away from it. He just stood there sticking his hands out. Made no sense. Almost cost the Chiefs. Defense stepped up. That's big on their end. End of the game. Jacksonville has 4th and goal, and they have a goal line stand. And the secondary was so good in tight coverage on those fade passes. You know, Justin Reed got flagged for a pass interference. You know, that was really the only mistake I thought the secondary made when defending those fade routes. Oh, Jalen Watson, Joshua Williams, Brian Cook, Trent McDuffie, L'Jarius Sneed, all those guys did a really good job of keeping their hands off the receiver, being physical, though, and making it a really tough play. And they caught all those balls, but there was nowhere to put their second foot in bounds. That's really smart heads-up defense by the secondary. And then when you're having Chris Jones generate pressure and George Karloftis and Felix Enudike Uzama generate pressure, well, it makes it that much tougher on a really good quarterback. That's why I think today I'm feeling really good. You know, Trevor Lawrence to me can be a top-5 quarterback, and he didn't look good at any point yesterday. There was not a point where you said, uh-oh, here he goes. He's going to start rolling. No, to me, that was just year one Trevor Lawrence. Chiefs made him look that way. And they're probably going to be able to overwhelm Justin Fields next week at Arrowhead Stadium. They're probably going to be able to overwhelm Zach Wilson. I mean, folks, we could be looking up at a 3-1 record going into Minnesota in a couple weeks, and we won't even remember that loss to Detroit because now we know how much Chris Jones impacts that defense. I mean, this could be a defense now. I know it's two games. But I want to give a shout-out to Tucker Franklin of KC Sports Network. He was one of the guys that put out a very bold take at the beginning of the year and said this can be a top-five defense. Maybe they will, maybe they won't. But we've seen throughout the Patrick Mahomes era, when is the defense at its worst? It's usually week one through five. They play some pretty good offenses. Those guys shred them. And then after the bye week, they play some bad quarterbacks. They get some confidence. And then you hope to have a pretty stout defense when it gets really cold in December and January. Right now, though, this defense has shown me a lot. Even without Chris Jones on Thursday Night Football against the Lions, the NFL opener, thought the secondary played really well. You know, defensive line couldn't generate a ton of heat, but they didn't have their best edge rusher or their second best edge rusher. And to me, that's important to note here with this defense. They impressed me a lot. There were a lot of shutdown drives. We talk about in baseball shutdown innings when you go out there and score a couple runs. Well, a shutdown inning is important. That means your pitcher goes back out there, 1-2-3 inning, back in the dugout. Let's go hit, boys. Now, that's what the defense did time and time again yesterday. Shutdown drives. Now, the Chiefs went out there, and you score on the opening drive of the half, and the defense just pretty much stood strong. Held their position. The Jags got 3 points in the second half. And if it wasn't for the Chiefs' defense, giving up a prevent drive right before the half, not trying to get beat deep, and Richie James fumbling a punt, the Jags have 3 points all day long. Now, this defense was very impressive. This is an uber-athletic group, and it's only going to get better. That's the bright thing here. Offensively, we all know it's going to get better. We know that Patrick Mahomes is not going to have many games where the offense scores just 17 points. The receivers, we saw Kadarius Toney look a lot better in week two. We talked about this where our three keys of the game. Get Kadarius Toney the ball early. They did so in the, the first quarter. Maybe it was early second quarter. It was just little pop passes, screen passes, got him going. He had the one bad fumble in the fourth quarter, but it went out of bounds. So to me, Kadarius Toney got a little bit of that confidence back. You know, Justin Watson had a dumb fumble. Just not being very strong with the ball, not being very tight with the ball. And then he catches one of the biggest passes for the Chiefs on the afternoon. That little fade route that eventually led to a Chiefs touchdown. That's bouncing back. And Richie James never bounced back, but maybe one of these games he's got a big punt return. Or he doesn't muff a punt, or he just does something a little extra for this offense. Now, Rashee Rice was quiet, but he was great on Thursday. MVS was very quiet yesterday. But this group, I think, is going to get better and better as they get more comfortable. The timing gets down. The communication gets down. And these are all things that can benefit a team like this. Now, if I do want to point out a negative, and I think this is one area which I have been skeptical on, was a little bit nervous about them in the offseason, and now I'm starting to see that it can be a problem. The offensive line was putrid yesterday. Really bad. And it came from one guy that you gave a hell of a lot of money to and another guy who we all kind of anticipated to be not a very good tackle. And that's Donovan Smith and Jawan Taylor. Let's start with Jawan Taylor. Jawan Taylor got benched yesterday. Back-to-back holds on a drive. Clearly, he was discombobulated because the NFL was cracking down on his quick first step that looked like a false start on the NFL opener. This is something he's going to have to correct and fix very quickly because you can't have your highest-paid tackle getting flagged five times in a big road game. That's inexcusable. Some of them were ticky-tack, but they were called nonetheless. You are paid to be a very good right tackle. You were not paid to go make the transition to the left side, like at least I expected him to. So you're at your comfortable position. You shouldn't be flagged five times a game. That's sixth-round rookie stuff that has to fill in for a guy that's injured. That was a terrible performance by Juwan Taylor yesterday. Donovan Smith is a guy that I was never high on in the offseason. I thought there were issues with Donovan Smith. I thought there was a big reason that Tampa Bay was good in letting him walk. And we've seen through two games, Donovan Smith allows a lot of pressures. And Orlando Brown Jr. was not significantly better than him. You know, there were still issues to OBJ's game. But you brought Donovan Smith in on a cheap one-year deal, and he's kind of looking like a one-year cheap deal. That's just from my point of view through these first two games. Creed Humphrey, your best lineman, was snapping every single ball low yesterday. That is a thing you have to correct if you're going to go into these primetime games. You can't have bad snaps. I mean, Patrick Mahomes is already dealing with little time in the pocket and receivers that sometimes can't get open. The only thing that can make that worse is a bad snap. And Creed Humphrey had a lot of bad snaps yesterday. So offensive line, to me, gets the D-minus grade yesterday. But again, that ties in to our best outcome of this game, or the best aspect of this win. You played this poorly offensively, you still find a way to beat a road team, or you still find a way to beat a team on the road that's going to go to the postseason. This Jacksonville team is going to win their division. You very well might see them again in January, and it's going to be a much better Jacksonville team. But hopefully at that point, it's a much better Chiefs team. I love the way the defense played. Those guys are fast. They're athletic. They're physical. Here's a thing, Marco, that I've been really impressed with. Tackling has been really good. Remember last year, that was a big issue early on. Nobody could tackle. Everybody got to the secondary, and guys are diving at the knees and the ankles and not being able to hang on. You know, Limer are getting the quarterback but can't wrap up and bring him down. This is a group that hits hard. They hit clean. That's an important thing. Last year, remember learning with the curve of roughing the passer, landing on guys. I mean, Chris Jones yesterday, he got flagged a couple times last year. Both sacks. You know, made sure to keep his body weight up. That's important. It's a little thing, but that keeps you from, you know, having a 4th and 18 turn into a 1st and 10 because of roughing the passer. Secondary has been really intelligent on the deep ball. You know, not getting too handsy, not grabbing the jersey. You know, the refs missed a completely blatant call on, I think it was Zay Jones. No, Brian Cook has great coverage, who, by the way, he's impressed me. A guy who's had to fill in for Juan Thornhill this year, the second-year player out of Cincinnati. Brian Cook had excellent coverage on Zay Jones and that deep ball in the fourth quarter. And Zay Jones just tackled him. Like, I think fully anticipated getting flagged for OPI. I mean, the replay shows Zay Jones wrapping both his arms around Brian Cook and tackling him, which eventually led to him getting nicked up a little bit. He got injured on that play. And that, to me, is the frustrating part, because if we're going to call DPI, you know, for just tackling a receiver, then it's got to be the same for a guy in the secondary. I mean, that would have been intercepted if Zay Jones didn't just blatantly tackle Brian Cook. Back to the point, though, of the secondary, it's putting yourself in a great position to have those things happen. Now, Brian Cook could have not played that more perfectly. Trent McDuffie could have not played some of those routes more perfectly. I mean, early on in the game, first quarter, might have been Jacksonville's first or second drive. You know, L'Jarius Sneed gets away with the age-old move of a cornerback where you put your right hand on the right hip, kind of turn him a bit, and then you lunge over the side and bat the ball down. I would say 8 out of 10 times it's not flagged, because all the focus is on a cornerback elevating his body and putting his body in front of it to knock the pass down, and you kind of get away with that tug, that pull. But that's a highly intelligent play by a cornerback in that spot. So secondary, to me, they're the top of the list. They have really impressed me. Linebacking core, I think, can get a little bit better. But like I said, very impressed with Drew Tranquil. I think Nick Bolden can get a little bit better. Willie Gay's been quiet. but it's helped having Drew Tranquil because Willie Gay would usually be put in spots to defend a Travis Etienne out of the backfield, a running back, a slot receiver. Now you have Drew Tranquil for that. And the edge rushing group, I'll give them a B plus right now. Now, Chris Jones was Chris Jones yesterday, the guy that you all missed in week one, that I missed in week one, incredibly frustrated with, but he showed out. I mean, we said he'd get some heat if he didn't play well on Sunday. He was the best defensive player on Sunday. He was not missing a beat. He was always in the backfield. George Karloftis really made big strides in these first two games. Derek Nnadi, I thought, has looked really well. You know, and then you start the Mike Dana opposite of him. Felix Anudike-Uzomah hasn't gotten a sack yet, but he's always finding himself around the quarterback. Overall, this defense through first two games, I give him an A. 21 points against Detroit, but seven of those came on a pick six, so 14 points, and then 9 points. That's a very good defense so far, and it's a big reason why I'm more pleased than usual about this first win of the year. You beat a damn good team with your defense, and you can't say that many times in the Patrick Mahomes era that a defense has played this well and gotten you a win. I mean, if I would have said on Friday the Chiefs score 17 points, I would have said they lose. They're not beating Jacksonville 17 points, but they won, and I would say they won pretty comfortably. You know, Jacksonville would have needed to force overtime, like I said, with a hope and a prayer. Needed a touchdown and the two-point conversion and hold Kansas City out of field goal range. That's what it would have taken to win that game. Defense gets it done. Now you look ahead. The Bears coming to Kansas City next Sunday, 3:25 kick. Can get back on track. The AFC West is terrible. You can jump back into first place on Sunday. And then we all don't even remember what happened on that home opener Thursday night game against the Lions. Marco, before we head to break and come back and talk some college football, your takeaways from this game. Are you more so pleased, frustrated a little bit, disappointed because you only get 17 points? Where do you fall on that line?
Right now, it's just a pleased with the team. You have opportunities for the offense in these next two matchups against the Bears and Jets to really kind of – there's time for the offense to get things together. I think right now, if you want to use the logic that we have in years past with Mahomes under quarterback and it being vice versa now, is maybe the offense needs 8 weeks to get going like we've said about the defense the last 4 to 5 years, whereas the defense is now coming out as hot as we would expect the offense to be. So for me, it's you got to be pleased with where the team's at. Those games that are now in the that are now in view with weeks 3 and 4 coming up aren't as scary as they seemed before the season started. Yep. Mahomes, remember what he did last time against Chicago. There's going to be some of that added motivation for that team that passed up on him the year he was drafted. So for me, let the offense figure out a lot of still a lot of youth on this team trying to figure out the offensive schematics. It's not an easy offense to get down. I don't care what Clyde Edwards-Helaire had to say after or during his first season here in Kansas City as a rookie. I think for the offense, it's just growing pains and what they've been able to do with the core pieces they have and it not being there. They'll figure it out. For the defense, you got to be excited that they've only allowed 2 touchdowns in 8 quarters now, and they didn't give up a single one against this new highly revamped Jacksonville Jaguars offense that put on a display last week against Indianapolis. Calvin Ridley was unheard of in this game. Christian Kirk heard his name, but it was because the Chiefs had a nice big third down stop. You want to talk about tackling that right there in the open field. I can't remember who to give credit to on the defensive side that came up with the stop yesterday afternoon, but that's where I'm at right now, is pleased. Definitely going to be looking at them a lot closer on the offensive side these next two games because I expect more out of them against Chicago. The Jets obviously will be more of a challenge up in New York for Sunday Night Football. So that could be a score where you look for the under. But to me, I'm pleased with what we've seen and excited to see where this team grows over the next 2 weeks. It's really fun having a team where the defense is kind of the shining spot on it and what they've been able to do. It's a lot of fun watching what Spagnuolo has created and drawn up for the first 2 weeks with the team, with his side of the football. Offense, just we'll see how they grow going forward. But if you have a defense like that playing 17 weeks of the season, then that's plenty of time for the offense to Patrick Mahomes to figure things out.
Yeah, it's fun to have a good defense. It really is fun to have a defense that can get off the field in big-time moments. They certainly did so yesterday in a 17-9 win over the Jacksonville Jaguars. Let's take our first break of the show. When we come back, Marco's Missouri Tigers took down the Kansas State Wildcats on a 61-yard game-winning field goal. We're going to dive into that next. And Kansas escapes Reno with a 7-point win. Disappointing win, but it shows that the culture has definitely changed in Lawrence. Both games being talked about next on ESPN Kansas City. Back here on The Shift on 94.5 FM and 1510 AM ESPN Kansas City. I am your host, Jack Johnson, alongside Marco Marquez. Both of us, I think, would say we're surprised on Saturday afternoon when the Missouri Tigers took down the Kansas State Wildcats. In fact, another big Missouri fan here in the studio, Curtis Seabolt, didn't believe the game was going to be very close. I don't think many of us here at the WHB studio thought Missouri was going to upend this Kansas State team. But maybe now when we look back, that Middle Tennessee game, that Week 2 game where Missouri narrowly escaped, they just had a vanilla playbook. They were just looking ahead to Kansas State. And I think you can chalk it up just as that. And Kansas State, a team that hammered their first two opponents, had Troy in Week 2. Maybe they showed a little bit too much. But what a really fun game. It made you long for the days of the old Big 12. Because this felt like an old school Missouri and Kansas State game. Really competitive. Last year, I think for Kansas State fans, was really fun. For college football fans, I would say not so much, because when you have a former rivalry like this, you don't really want it to be 40-12. You want it to be like Saturday, 30-27, neck and neck the entire way, trading blows back and forth. And Missouri, despite having all this quarterback controversy, I believe even booed Brady Cook when he came out onto the field. Oh, Eli Drinkwitz was not happy about that whatsoever. He was great. 23 of 35, two touchdowns, no picks, and 356 yards. We said this on Friday, I believe, Marco, that Missouri had to get the running game going to be close in this game. They only had 74 yards rushing. They won this game by airing out the ball. And, of course, Luther Burden just being a freak, one of the most talented players, I believe, not only in the SEC but all of college football. He had seven catches for 114 yards and two touchdowns. But I want to start it off with you, Marco, because you're watching the game at home with your brother who was back in town. You see that first drive go down. Kansas State gets the tip pass to the goal line, and Phillip Brooks just right place, right time, catches the ball in the end zone. On your couch, wherever you're watching, maybe you're sitting at a table or something like that.
You got it.
What's going through your mind? Are you going, here we go, it's going to be a long day if Kansas State's getting luck like that?
Dude, and it was on third and goal, too, after Missouri had done so well to just force Kansas State to possibly kick a field goal, and then that happened. Yeah, it was me and my brother and my dad, we've watched plenty of Missouri upsets, moments and games happen in our family living room, and we just looked at each other like, because of course that would happen. Of course that's how this game would start out. Kansas State driving down the field, ate up almost 5 minutes of the clock. Missouri's defense had no answer, really, until they got into the shortened field. Then you're like, all right, this is a winnable drive if they can just force the field goal. One more stop. Kansas State's by the 10. And it took it out of us. Now, one of our favorite things to say after any of our teams that we like to root for goes down by a score is, well, you weren't going to hold the other team scoreless. Mm-hmm. You were going to have to score at least something if you're going to win this game. So that was the encouraging moment, but that was encouraging afterwards. But in the moment, it was like, just because, of course, man, the tip ball just landing in Phillip Brooks' arms. And it had to be Phillip Brooks, too. Like, why wouldn't it be? So it had taken a little bit of the life out of us. But Missouri coming back and quickly scoring a touchdown on the next drive, on their opening drive, definitely put life back into us. It was like, all right, they're here to compete. They're not going to let that weigh down on them as well. And, I mean, they came out and threw a 47-yard touchdown pass. Brady Cook, man, just right there in that moment, that after that first drive, they were going to be doing something different than what they had been, as you referenced, against Middle Tennessee State. Something that we didn't see them do against South Dakota. They tried to do it last Saturday one time, but Brady Cook, under throwing Luther Burden on the open shot that he had in against Middle Tennessee State, just seeing the connection there is like, all right, something finally is clicking with this offense. So that we were Missouri filled us back up with motivation and confidence after Kansas State had, I guess you could say, like, you couldn't feel that curse as much. You felt like they were going to be a part of that game offensively if it was going to be neck and neck.
I think the game flipped for me when my thought process went through, wow, it was a really good drive by Missouri. Luther Burden has the long catch, but it kind of felt like busted coverage a little bit for Kansas State. Maybe just a mishap there. Maybe a mind lapse, if you want to call it that, or a mental lapse is what I should say. When it flipped for me was when I think it was on Kansas State's next possession.
Yeah.
You know, Will Howard has that bad pick. And that's now three games in a row. Will Howard has had a dumb pick.
Mm.
Just forcing the issue, and it doesn't really need to be forced in there. It was third down, a back foot throw, and just off timing, really. I mean, I think he expected it was either Phillip Brooks or might have been R.J. Garcia to come back over the middle. He didn't, and Missouri just had to sit there right there for the pick. So to me, that's when it kind of flipped, and I go, man, Missouri does not look like the team from last week. And Kansas State doesn't look like the team from last week. But what I was so impressed with this Missouri squad, is there still were a handful of times Kansas State had a long drive that resulted in six. And Missouri could have folded. I mean, that offense stalled about midway through the second quarter to early on in the third. Missouri just wasn't getting a lot going. A couple penalties set them in third and long situations. But then the defense stepped up, that really good Missouri defense, and they kept Kansas State at bay. Will Howard wasn't able to air it out like I think he wanted to. You know, Ben Sinnott seemed like his best target on the day. I mean, Phillip Brooks had the touchdown catch, but again, it was right place, right time. It was not supposed to go to him. But other than not containing Ben Sinnott, I thought Missouri did a really good job of forcing Will Howard to fit the ball in a tight window, you know, not giving him too many busted coverage opportunities. I mean, Ben Sinnott's just kind of one of those Kansas State guys that is always around, it feels like, always finding ways to get open. I mean, he's number 34 and he's a tight end. Yeah. Just feels very unorthodox, like a fullback going out there and carving up your defense. But Missouri's secondary, I thought, was really good. And they generated pressure on Will Howard a couple of times that forced him to fit the ball in a tight window on the run. One of those times resulted in an interception. But then with the game on the line, let's fast forward here to the fourth quarter. There was a great opportunity, and I think Kansas State fans will look back and go, yep, this is when we lost the game. A great opportunity where they're driving down the field, and I think they're down three at this point. It was after the Luther Burden, you know, catch and run, basically like a cross-field pass, and it's had all the blockers in front of them. You know what I thought of in that moment? This is just my brain going back to weird moments. The AFC Championship game against New England, where Damien Williams, they had that screen pass where he just basically threw it across the field and had the entire offensive line blocking for him, and he just walked into the end zone. That's basically what Missouri had there, is just crossfield pass, had all the blockers for him, was able to stroll into the end zone. And I go, okay, Missouri needs one stop. But K-State gets deep into Missouri territory. Now, Trayshawn Ward had a couple of big catch and runs, and he sets him up for Kansas State to go and take the lead here. And remember, that would have put them up by four.
Yeah.
And Missouri then has to go all the way back down and score again, which against that Kansas State defense, easier said than done. But the Missouri defense holds strong and forces a field goal. That, to me, is, I think, when Kansas State fans went, okay, you know, this may be where it goes wrong for us. This is where Missouri could drive down set the game-winning field goal. But correct me if I'm wrong here. Kansas State gets the ball back. Missouri has to get the ball back to them.
Yeah, Missouri had to punt.
Yeah, they had to punt, and here comes Kansas State again. And once again, Missouri's defense back against the wall. What are you going to do? They then force Kansas State to punt. And that was an excellent opportunity with good field position, I might add, for Kansas State to just inch forward to the 30-yard line, set up a game-winning 47-yard field goal. They couldn't. Missouri did a great job of making sure that they weren't leaving too many open spots, you know, not leaving the middle of the field open. You know, they were having to check it down a little bit, and Missouri was there to tackle. Therefore, Kansas State punts it back. And then I'm going, yep, this is Missouri's chance. This is Missouri's opportunity. All you have to do is not let Kansas State touch the ball again. You can either go to overtime or win this damn thing. And they get closer and closer to midfield. And then Eli Drinkwitz almost ruined this perfect opportunity for Harrison Meavis and Missouri's offense. Now, somehow, some way, I don't even know what's going on the sideline, whether they thought they had more time. Clearly they did. But how you're not ready for that moment. Missouri gets a delay of game penalty. Going from a 56-yard field goal to a 61. 5 yards doesn't seem like a lot, but in terms of makeable field goals, anytime it's under 60, you go, he's got a boot. He probably could make this. 60-plus, it's going to take a prayer to hit this. Like, everything has to go right. Snap, hold, nobody gets through the offensive line. You have to kick it low, and it has to be on target. Like, so much has to go right for a 60-plus yard field goal. But maybe in the end, this is what I thought, Marco. I thought with Harrison Meavis getting to go from 56 to 61, it almost took more pressure off of him. Because who expects him to make a 60-plus yard field goal? I would say maybe some, but it's like if he misses it, you don't go, man, you had one job. You can't make a 61-yard field. No, nobody in SEC history had done that. So to me, I'm looking at it and going, if I'm a kicker, I'd go, yeah, give me 5 more yards. Because 56, even though it's a long kick, there's something about the mental thing of it being under 60 as opposed to over 60. And not only did Harrison Meavis make that kick, he drilled it. Absolutely drilled it. That might have been good from 65. And it made me think of last year. And I know you know this game very well, Marco, because we talked about it that Monday after the weekend. When Harrison Meavis clanked the 20-yard field goal against Auburn. That would have won them the game, but it set up overtime, and then Missouri fumbled out of the back of the end zone to lose down in Alabama. You know, that to me was like a villainous arc, if you will, for Harrison Meavis, where everybody is done with him. You can't even make a 20-yard field goal, and then the next year he gets this opportunity in a game like this. And we talked about all offseason how big this game was, and he gets the chance to right the wrongs. Now, this Kansas State team, it's a non-con game. Missouri, it's a non-con game, but it's the mental thing of it. Man, K-State goes and wins that game in Columbia in front of a sold-out crowd and a Missouri team that gave them their best shot. You feel pretty damn good going into conference play. Now it's about, well, you got to go in there and beat UCF. It's a must-win game. You can't fall to 2-2 this early on in the year. Missouri, you get Memphis coming to Columbia, or do you go on the road to Memphis? St. Louis, okay, so it's a halfway point, if you will. So you play Memphis on a neutral site. Now you're feeling like, we just beat Kansas State. Let's go to 4-0, go to Vandy, kick their ass. We're 5-0, one game away from bowl eligibility, and I think you play Kentucky right after that, which you believe is a rivalry game.
Yes.
So I feel like everything is lining up this year for it to be a home run year for Eli Drinkwitz and Missouri. For Kansas State, no, not panicking. They've lost to Arkansas State in the non-con before. They've lost to North Dakota State in the non-con. They've lost to Tulane in the non-con. It's happened before. Mm-hmm. They usually respond in an emphatic way. I think what's different is in every single one of those games, especially the Arkansas State and the Tulane game, Kansas State went to Oklahoma the next week. They went to Norman and won. Like, they had to go into an environment where they were not expected to win, and they won. Now they come back home. They're expected to beat UCF in a backup quarterback. There's more pressure on that. Missouri, flip the script here. You just basically solved your quarterback controversy. It's going to be Brady Cook for the foreseeable future for the way he played and played banged up at the end of that game. Both quarterbacks were a little bit banged up. But now you get to go play Memphis, who's undefeated, neutral site, but basically in your own backyard. You can set this up to be a very good Missouri team heading into a really tough stretch at the back half of your schedule. I mean, Missouri could be 5-0, top 15 in the nation, bring on the top dogs in the SEC, and see where we go from there. And this was just such a pivotal and big-time game for Missouri and for Kansas State. And I'll be honest, I was shocked that Missouri pulled this out. But correct me if I'm wrong, Marco, we talked about that. That Vegas line was very fishy.
Mm-hmm.
Vegas had it at 4 points, which Missouri won by three. Yeah. And I was like, it should be 8.5 or 9. I mean, this Kansas State team is so good. Missouri's looked a little bit shaky in the first 2 weeks. But Kansas State did not. And maybe it was just Missouri being vanilla in week one, vanilla in week two, so they could play like this in week three. I tip my cap to Drinkwitz. I tip my cap to Missouri, Brady Cook, Luther Burden. That student section, it was rocking and loud. And for Kansas State, not the end of the world, but certainly a game that I think everybody in Manhattan expected them to go into and win that one. Any final takeaways you had before we talk Kansas and Nevada?
You asked me two things last week before the weekend. What would this win mean for Missouri? And is Brady Cook, where is my trust with him as the quarterback going forward? Starting there, he proved me wrong on Saturday. And you mentioned the boos from the fans as he was coming out of the tunnel. I will say there were K-State fans in the crowd as well, but it's no secret that there were Missouri fans, including myself, calling for seeing more of Sam Horn and everything. But Brady Cook, this is his football team. Jack, I'm locking myself in with it. I'm committed to him throughout the rest of the season. He's earned that in me. Doesn't matter how it goes going forward. He's shown everybody that he needs to be QB1 till the end of the season. And then the win, just huge. I think it was worth $100,000 and more. Touching on the student, you saw the students rushing the field. Biggest win under Drinkwitz, biggest win at Furrow Field in some years. So it just that you talked about getting that sixth win and bowl eligible now. Looked at what happened around the rest of the SEC, Tennessee falling to Florida. It really is shaping up where Missouri and Georgia, maybe even Florida, mm-hmm. I'll listen to them, are competing for that SEC East title. So that's where the confidence is with me right now going forward with this very balanced Missouri team.
Yeah, I can't wait to see how the rest of this schedule plays out for both teams because we just discussed it. I love it how we can discuss stuff in the offseason and it lives up to the hype. It was a pivotal game, and we'll see where both Missouri and Kansas State go from here. Let's take a two-minute break and come back and wrap up our show with some Kansas talk as they narrowly escaped the Nevada Wolfpack in Reno. Ugly game, but I'm going to tell you why it's an important one for the culture next on ESPN Kansas City. We are wrapping up the shift on 94.5 FM and 1510 AM ESPN Kansas City. I'm your host, Jack Johnson, alongside Marco Marquez. It's a weird Saturday night for the Kansas Jayhawks in Reno. And what I once thought was going to be exciting about the game turned out to be not so fun. I was somewhat looking forward to going through an entire slate of college football games, and then Kansas played at 9:30. I was done with that by 11 o'clock. I kept watching the game, but just done with the excitement of it. The game was kind of dragging on. It was boring. Kansas wasn't playing well. And I'm like, man, it is not going to get done till about 1 a.m. And then I thought to myself, this is going to be the new Big 12. Because you'll play Arizona State. There's going to be 1 a.m. basketball games when they're all said and done. Utah from time to time. Oh, I thought I could do it in dosage. You know, maybe get one game on the schedule of a 9:30 kick, but there's going to be a lot more than that. But anyways, as for the actual game in Reno, Kansas did not play well. I think a lot of things were unlucky for them. I mean, Nevada fumbled the ball 5 times, and none of them were recovered by Kansas. A couple of them were recovered by Nevada further down the field. The ball was punched out, it rolled forward, and Nevada fell on it. So it felt like some of the things that may even out over time, they just were not going Kansas's way. Now, Nevada, you fumble 5 times. At worst, you should probably lose 2 of those. None of them fell into the arms of Kansas. They do get it done 31-24. Devin Neal was the star in this game. Jalen Daniels, despite not looking great, actually played pretty well. Special teams, once again, flawless for Kansas. Sean Snyder has done a great job with this group. You know, Seth Keller has been a great kicker for Kansas. You feel confident when he just goes out there to kick it from 30, 40, 45, doesn't matter. No, he's been nails so far, at least in these first three games, can always change. But that was a big thing for me. Special teams staying consistent, not screwing up. And if the special teams was bad, maybe it's Nevada snapping their 12-game losing streak, which is the longest in the FBS right now. But the reason this is big for the culture, and I saw some people talking about this a little bit, and once you digest a bad win, you go, okay, it doesn't matter. Anything you do in week one, two, and three does not matter worth a lick for week four. You still have to go out there and beat that opponent that's in front of you. I mean, it goes back to some of the really bad years for Kansas. There were times, I mean, remember when Oklahoma came into Lawrence a couple weeks into the season? They were top five in the nation with Caleb Williams. Kansas almost won. Did that mean anything for the next week? No. Kansas got blasted the next week. You know, they nearly knocked off TCU, who was top five in the nation in 2014. Did that mean anything for the next couple weeks? No. Kansas still only won three games. So you just chalk it up as, hey, you won the game. It was a road game. It was a late kick. You probably were flat, lackadaisical, looking ahead to BYU. That's how I looked at it. But this is big for the culture because for years, a decade plus in Lawrence, winning a game like that would have been unbelievable. That might have been your second win of the year, and you probably don't win another game after that. That's where it would have been. Now with the Lance Leipold era, you feel bad about wins like that. It's like, oh, we should have beat them by 30. You know, it was a big spread. Let me get that straight. Nevada's a terrible football team. You should have beaten the brakes off of them, but you didn't. Okay, that's just the reality here. You didn't play that well. Defense was not very good. They weren't falling on the loose balls. Nevada wanted it more. The lackadaisical offense in the first half. I thought they could have just pounded the rock and won that game with Devin Neal. Didn't really commit to the run until the second half. But the drives in which they responded after Nevada scored, it was a lightning strike. It was very quick. And it showed you that maybe, in the end, Kansas once again was being a little bit vanilla, not trying to show their hand against BYU. To me, though, it's just a breath of fresh air that for Kansas fans now, you can be upset about winning a road football game against an FBS opponent, whether it's Nevada or it's Georgia. Now, I know that hasn't happened yet, but you get what I'm saying here. You know, you just take what you can get. You just win that game, move on. Kansas is 3-0. You're 3-0 in back-to-back years for the first time since the early 90s. Think about that. In the age when you could schedule four cupcakes for your non-con before taking on the Big 12 and half the Big 12 teams, depending if you were in the north or the south, Kansas had not had back-to-back 3-0 starts since the early 90s. Lance Leipold, in year two and three of his tenure at Kansas, has already done that. And now you roll in to week four, which, again, Vegas being very fishy here, Kansas is nearly a 10-point favorite at home against BYU. BYU just went into Fayetteville and beat Arkansas 38-31. That is very fishy to me. But you win the game, you move on. They didn't play well, but you think about it, if a team fumbles against you five times again, you're probably getting one or two of those, which can change the game. I think if Kansas got one of those fumbles, they win this game by double digits. They get two of them, they probably win by 20-plus. That's, to me, what it came down to. The fumbles just either rolled out of bounds or Nevada fell back on top of them. But I don't know. It was kind of like in the Missouri State game, just lackadaisical first half. You felt like at any point they could just gash Missouri State, but they didn't. It wasn't until the fourth quarter where some of those turnovers started to happen that Kansas pulled away. And that, to me, is what could have happened with Nevada. You know, a fumble goes your way or two, this game's a blowout. But you get it done, you got to win, you're 3-0. And the goal should always be get to 6 as fast as you can. Now, the goal, the higher goal here is to get to 7, 8, maybe 9 wins. But I will always say, you are gunning for 6 first. You want to extend your regular season. And if you get to 4-0 versus BYU, you set up quite the matchup in Austin, which I believe Texas this week will get, I don't think, a top opponent. I haven't checked the full week 4 schedule yet. Texas will be on the road against Baylor, where they are a 15.5-point favorite. If Texas wins that game and KU beats BYU, battle of undefeateds, KU will be ranked, Texas will be probably top 3, maybe top 2 in the nation, which the game times have come out for week 5. KU and Texas will kick off on ABC at 2:30. So a prime time matchup between maybe a battle of undefeateds in Austin. That may be the most anticipated Kansas-Texas game of all time. ABC primetime 2:30 kick does not get much better than that. But all I'll say about this game in Reno, late kick, maybe a couple things here, not one thing. Late kick, I think you were a little bit flat. I think Lance Leipold knew that defense was flat. But a lot of the odds things just didn't fall in your favor. 5 fumbles, none of them recovered by Kansas. Some of those things are just going to go your way, and you hope it goes your way when you take on BYU this coming Saturday at the booth. Kickoff at 2:30 on ESPN, another primetime game for Kansas. The Hawks are a 9.5-point favorite, the total at 56. There is Ray Charles, so it's time to go. That wraps up another edition of The Shift on 94.5 FM and 1510 AM ESPN Kansas City. I've been your host, Jack Johnson, alongside Marco Marquez. We will talk to you tomorrow at 10 AM. You take it easy, Kansas City.